You are listening to the Mission Matters Podcast Network, where we amplify the stories of entrepreneurs, executives, and experts.
Hi, everyone. Paul Lang from Discipline Trading Strategies. This is podcast number 31. It's called The Shocking Way to View the Market. I had to keep the title short, of course, and you can see in the episode description, but in case you can't read it right now, the real title should be The Absolute Way You Must View the Market to Make Money, which would shock the average person and even the average person in the market. Kind of a comical title. This is kind of I wouldn't call it a summary, but maybe a concluding process of many of my prior podcasts. By the way, I was looking up and thinking of titles. I probably have 150 to 200 titles I'll be able to do. We're on 32, and that's without really totally repeating anything. Naturally, there are many points or concepts you may hear multiple times because they're important concepts and a lot of things do overlap in trading. This is one of those because what I want to talk about is the bottom line of how you have to view the market. And I've touched on this on many prior podcasts. As a matter of fact, an awful lot of them really are the foundation to understanding how you have to view the market. But I'm going to conclude this podcast in kind of a very hard, direct way that some of you may not like. I sometimes say when I'm talking, and maybe you have kind of figured this out throughout the prior podcast, that some people listening to these podcasts won't listen long because they'll just tune out and say, okay, this guy's kind of crazy. Some of you probably, you know, about 10% of you may totally get it. You already understand this and you're just kind of listening because you're appreciating somebody else saying this to you. And the big bulk in the middle, maybe 60 to 80% of you are probably thinking, you know, I've thought like this, I've wondered this, what I've been told just doesn't make sense and what this guy's saying actually makes sense. I'm not sure if I believe him or not. And you keep listening. Well, this may be looked at as kind of the conclusion of some of the ultimate thoughts that I've been trying to get across in my prior podcast. One of them, for example, is called a random walk. I discussed if the market is a random walk or not. And I said, yeah, for the most part, it is. Even though I trade it, you have to understand that it is. We had discussions in the beginning about fundamentals and news and what is trading exactly and all kinds of different things. There are a lot of topics that weren't on point for this, but several of them are getting around that question of just what is the market, so to speak. When I say the market, of course, I'm really referring to the broad category of the tradable markets, whether it's Forex or futures or the futures of the market itself, of course. I'm mostly focused in discussing stocks, the U.S. equity market, when I'm discussing most of these things. But really, it doesn't matter much because it permeates everything. So I'm going to keep this fairly short and sweet, and I want to just kind of build up to what I want to say at the very end here. Let's start with this topic here. Will the market crash? Will the market crash? Will the stock market, will the U.S. stock market crash? Perhaps the most ignorant question anybody could ask, because the answer is, of course, the market will crash. There's absolutely no doubt, no question about it. It has time and time again in the past. It'll continue to do so in the future. As we get on a little bit, I'll explain why it has no choice but to do that. The only intelligent question that can be asked is when. One characteristic of bearish people is that they typically get bearish way too soon. As a matter of fact, maybe miss the bigger part of the move. Bull markets typically run, 10, 12 years like the last one did here. And oftentimes people are out of it after 3 years saying, okay, it's too extended and we're going to crash. And that's their feeling. And of course, they're eventually proven right. But that 7 or 8 years later doesn't do you much good. So the question is always just when are these things going to happen? And when the market crashes, will it be buyable again, or will it just fall all the way to zero? Well, again, another silly topic. Of course, markets crash, markets get bought again. The key is to try and be pretty close to the top when you get out and pretty close to the bottom when you get in, if you are getting in and out. One of the dumbest, I'm going to go as far to say, as most ignorant comments I've ever heard on the news was made by someone, and I'm not going to say who, it doesn't matter. But she was one that was really complaining a lot about when we had a bear market the last time. I'm going back quite a few years, like in 2008, we had this bear market. Of course, the people on TV never believe it. It's just hard to understand. How could this ever happen? And oh, would anybody ever buy the market again? Well, after we hit that bottom and we rallied for a period of time, probably it was maybe 5 years ago, this comment came out. And the comment was asking a guest, well, can we finally trust the stock market again? Now, of course, this is after the market rallied from 2009 until 2017, 2018. So we've already had that huge rally off the bottom. And now the question comes out of her mouth, can we trust the market again? The most ignorant comment ever. Because number one, no, you never trust the market. It's not like investing in your house. It's something that's going to go up and down. And if you miss the move from the 8 years prior to that, well, it's almost time to be getting out, not thinking about trusting it and getting back in again. There's a saying out there that you should buy when there's blood in the streets. And that's exactly true. When people are saying in the market, boy, this is it. The market's done. Nobody's going to buy this. The market's probably going to be outlawed. That's when you should buy. And of course, when everybody starts saying, hey, boy, the market is fantastic. This run is going to last forever. Everybody should jump into this. That's, of course, when you need to get out. There's a lot of truth to that in general. Naturally, that doesn't help your timing much, but there's some truth to that in general. So now for a couple of comments, and nobody's ever asked this of me. I've never seen this printed anywhere. I imagine with all the commentary on the market, somebody said this. Is the market a giant Ponzi scheme? Well, it is. I have nothing against that, but factually, I mean, really, that's what it is. Tons of money coming into the market. Money runs out. There is a limited supply of money, and naturally, that limit keeps getting increased when the Fed pumps money in. But nevertheless, there is a limit to the amount of money in the world, in the United States, that people have. And when everybody puts their money in, there is no choice but for the market to crash. And isn't that what a Ponzi scheme is in a sense? It really is. I'm not saying that's a reason you should stay out. The best thing you can do is be in the market from the right periods of time. I wouldn't recommend getting in now to hold the next 20 years, but at the right time, the market is a great thing to do. But nevertheless, you have to understand it is a Ponzi scheme in a sense. Yes, over time, it's been up, 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 up. But there are some really big crashes that hurt you if you get in the wrong time. Like I mentioned before, I'm sure, if you got in at the wrong time in 2000, 2001, it took you 17 years to get your money back. That's not a very good investment. That crash came. It's everybody just getting their money out again. So sure, it's a Ponzi scheme in a sense. It really is in a big picture. It's a legal Ponzi scheme. But that's why you have to worry a little bit about timing if you are not just in it for the long haul for the last 40 years. And as I said, I'm going to keep this one short. And this is my concluding comment. I don't believe I've ever mentioned before in these podcasts. It is something that I usually end my introduction to Mastering Technical Analysis course with. By the way, that's a free course for people. If you check out the website and look at the calendar, I offer that Friday afternoons for about 5 hours to people. There'll be one coming up in about 3 weeks. I typically end with this. But I asked this question, and I think the question is really eye-opening, and it is maybe the ultimate thing that kind of ties together a lot of the concepts I've been getting across over the prior 30 podcasts. The question is this: if I had to pick someone and my life depended on teaching them to trade in 100 days, who would I pick in terms of age, sex, occupation, prior experience, market experience? Who would I pick? Who would be the ultimate person? So let's start with this first. I'll kind of rule this out. I don't think this, in my pick for my final category, when you see what it is, it's not going to matter if it's male or female. I think women make better traders to some degree because they don't have that testosterone problem. Sorry, men, women, you're better traders, generally speaking. You're more easily adept to learning and understanding. But that aside, I think it's a small point. Let's forget about sex. Let's talk about experience in life, experience in the market, age, occupation. Who would I want to train? So while you're thinking about that, let me run through some of the possibilities. First of all, the absolute worst occupation to learn how to trade the market would be a stockbroker, a financial person of any kind, a market maker, anybody actively involved in the market, especially in some kind of a sales position like stockbrokers are. Sorry if you're in that position, but you probably already know it. Every time I talk to a stockbroker, they go, I'm hopeless, I'm helpless. It's not what they do. A lot of people don't understand also that even to the professionals in the market makers who are in charge of running a stock, so to speak, the specialist market makers, they don't trade. They don't do that. They don't do what we do. They have something very different they do. They're fantastic at what they do, but put them in front of a screen with their own account and tell them to make money from looking at stocks, they have a very hard time with that typically. I've trained two market makers, I know. The absolute wrong answer would be anybody with significant experience in terms of being in the market one way or another. Now, excluded from that commentary would be an already trained professional trader. But of course, my comment was, who would I have to train? It wouldn't be fair to say I'm going to pick an already profitable trained trader. So leaving somebody like that out, of course, who's left over. Here's another very difficult profession to be in and switch to being a trader, and that is a doctor. I may have touched on this in an earlier podcast. doctors are very difficult to train. And the reason is very simple. A lot of what we learn is both conscious and subconscious. And to be a medical doctor for many years, you have things ingrained into you both consciously and subconsciously. A doctor has been programmed to save the patient at all costs. Somebody comes into the emergency room, they have gunshot or ulcer or whatever it is, they'll do whatever is necessary to save that patient. Even if somebody were to ask them, honestly, what are the odds you're going to save this patient? Even if it's 10%, 5%, they're going to pull out every tool, spend all the money, pull out the big calipers and zappers and whatever it is that doctors do, and they're going to spend whatever they need to, even for the slightest chance to save that patient. That's what doctors are trained to do. Take that doctor and put him or her into the trading world, and guess what happens? They will do anything to save that trade. They have a bad trade. They can't see it die. They're not going to get out. They're not going to take their stop. They're going to add more shares and try and save that patient. I've trained doctors, let me tell you, four or five of them. It's absolutely true. Doctors, you probably acknowledge it. Hard to train because of built-in concepts like that. Lawyers are not much better. Lawyers are actually trained to do one of the worst sins you can do in trading. Lawyers are trained to justify the actions of themselves or another. In other words, if an attorney is representing their client and the client just ran over a nun in a wheelchair because he was drunk and high and on drugs and whatever, the attorney has to back up his client and he's going to be out there saying, hey, yeah, what happened was terrible, but you know what? It's not really his fault. His father used to abuse him. He's been trying to get off drugs and he was just fleeing this terrible accident that happened and blah, 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 blah. He's trying to justify the actions of this person, no matter how bad they were. Well, take that attorney and put him into a trade. And what happens? They get into a day trade and they say, okay, here's my stop. Here's what it is. And when the stop hits, instead of getting out, they say, you know what? Actually, if I were to back up to a bigger chart, this actually still makes sense. I'm just trying to be too particular, too small-minded with this. Let's back up and look at this as a big day trade till the end of the day. End of the day comes, they're underwater like crazy. They say, you know what? This really should have been a swing trade. This is a good stock, and I just shouldn't have been trading it so tight on an intraday time frame. Let's back up and take it as a swing trade. It'll be just fine. Then, of course, the next morning it gaps down. Now they're underwater 10 times what they're supposed to be. And then they start saying, well, you know what? This is really fundamentally, this is a good company. It's going to come back someday. That's justifying all the wrong actions, never acknowledging you're wrong, and justifying your steps every step of the way. And any professional, doctor, lawyer, engineer, whatever it is, they have the additional problem that very successful people aren't accustomed to handling loss properly because they avoid loss. They do whatever is necessary. In the real world, a lot of times you can roll up your sleeves, jump in, do it yourself, fire, hire, whatever you need to do to make something work. And it doesn't work that way in the market. Losing on individual trades is part of a winning trading plan concept. Many very successful people can't handle that because any losing trade to them makes them a loser. Other difficult professions, engineers and architects, very tough because they are used to having an exact science. Put them into the market and they want to look at a chart and they want to say, well, you said we're supposed to not be that close to the moving average or it's too far from the moving average. Give me a number. How about 6.443% away from the moving average? Is that close enough? Well, that's not the way the market works. It's not about exact numbers. They always want to get out the tools, measure things exactly. Trading is part art, and engineers and architects don't like that. They don't have a good time with that because they're looking for an exact science all the time. We try to make trading as exact of a science as we can. But in the bottom line, there's some art that comes in there that distinguishes a good trader from a so-so trader. So who would I pick? This is the answer that may shock you. I would pick to train a 15-year-old young man or young woman that loves to play and is very good at video games. That's who I would pick. Why is that the case? Well, number one, a fresh, clean slate of a mind. These are always the easiest people to train. No preconceived notions, no concept about what they think or they know is going to happen with anything. Fresh mind. And younger people have an amazing ability to instantly hit the reset button in their mind. Adults can't do that. If you watch a young person play a video game, they will take the new video game that they've never played before. They'll put it in the machine. They'll just hit cancel, cancel, cancel with all the instructions, and they'll just start playing, not knowing what they're doing. They'll start playing the game. And if it's one of those shoot 'em up type of games, they'll get killed in 30 seconds. But you know what they do? They go back, they hit reset, they start over, and they are anxiously looking forward to meeting that same experience where they just failed. And they figure out how to get around that particular obstacle. They play for 3-4 minutes and then get killed. They immediately take in that information, they adjust, they get better, 2-4 hours, and they're playing for hours at a time. They adjust, they hit reset, and there's no mental damage done to them. They don't feel like a loser. They feel like they're gaining experience every step of the way. And that's exactly how you should be as a trader. Yet, very few adults are able to do that. But Paul, that leaves me with the implication that the stock market is nothing but a video game. Bingo. That's exactly what it is. If you listen to everything else I've talked about, the fact that all the other things that people tend to look at, whether it's the economy, fundamentals, news, all these different things, I've explained to you, they're all worthless to look at. They really are. I'm not saying that they don't influence things in one way or another. What I'm saying is we have no idea to what degree all these things have already influenced and to what degree any new information may or may not influence. All of that information, whatever it is you want to talk about, it's all incorporated in a chart. So it's not that these other things are meaningless. It's that they're built into the chart. So when you look at the fact that what we need to do, and really I always joke around, the best way to be a trader is to be on a deserted island with nothing but your laptop or computer, and you get nothing but your feed to the market, and that's all you know. That's the best way to trade. You look at those charts, and yes, it's just like a video game. You input the information that you get from the charts when you fully understand them, and you make your decisions on that. That's the way I've done things almost since I have begun trading. I typically get up and don't listen to anything in the morning. Now, I've been experienced enough for years and years, I could listen to whatever news. It's not going to influence me because I laugh at it. But a lot of times, I just want to have that clean, fresh mind. Don't turn on anything in the morning. Grab a cup of tea or a cup of coffee and sit down in front of my charts and then start my day. And that's the best way to do things. That's all I care about. I run a trading room in the morning. Sometimes people type stuff in there. Oh, this stock's gapping because of this or because of that. And you know, I could just care less. I always want to ask, well, how did that help you? Okay, this stock is gapping just below the last week's consolidation. And you're telling me it's gapping because there's a rumor that some of the parts they make are being recalled. Or there's a rumor that the CEO may quit. Or they just released bad earnings. Or they just released good earnings. How does that news help you interpret what's going on? I've explained this before in prior podcasts. But yes, in essence, you have to look at the market as playing a video game. You have the appropriate charts in front of you. There's always going to be 4 time frames to get our information from. You synthesize that when you learn how to read a chart and you make your decisions. And as I mentioned, again, in one of the prior podcasts, not every single chart you look at is going to be crystal clear what to do. That's why the advantage I feel we have in the stock market is to look at multiple stock symbols, because we have all these different symbols to look at. And then we look for the ones that have those patterns where they're just kind of jumping out at us and saying, hey, you know what? Somebody's buying me. Somebody's selling me. I can't hide it anymore. That's what we look for. That's what technical analysis is all about when you really understand it properly. Hope you enjoyed this one. New podcasts come out every Thursday. And by the way, an easy way to stay in touch with these at the disciplinetradingstrategies.com homepage. Most of the time, right on the front page is a little thing that says other stuff to do with DTS. If you click on that, one of them has the podcast right there. So you can click on any one of your 3 favorite formats to listen to the DTS podcast. Until next time, this is Paul. Good trading, everybody.